And this is The Call-In. This week, we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. We received an overwhelming response. Hundreds of people told us their stories.
I am a PTSD sufferer from when I was a pedestrian hit by a car when I was 20.
Now, this is about my post-traumatic stress from my bear mauling.
My husband and I both have PTSD after the suicide of our daughter.
I had a traumatic experience with the birth of my daughter.
I was in a car accident. Someone ran a red light and T-boned me.
I am a multiple sexual assault survivor.
I grew up in an abusive household.
PTSD is often associated with combat, but as we heard there, trauma comes in many forms. Studies show that up to 8% of Americans have suffered PTSD at some point in their lives. Michael Coleman is part of that 8%. He's a retired social worker who has struggled with the disorder. Listening in with Coleman's permission is Dr. Sandro Galea of Boston University, who studies PTSD, and we'll be hearing from him in a minute. But first, Michael, thanks for calling in.
No problem.
So tell me a little bit about your work.
I was a social worker for 13 years, and I worked with the Department of Social Services in North Carolina in foster care and investigations.
So when you say foster care investigations, what kind of work did you do? What kind of stories did you hear?
Well, it's not so much hearing stories, but you're going out there on a constant basis, and you're going into situations that are very stressful, because when you knock on someone's door, they're not happy to see you. And of course, the situations can vary, everything in that. But there's physical abuse or sexual abuse. There's pretty severe neglect in cases. And you have to see it all. And I've seen children who were bleeding when I got to the home. I've gone out to schools and interviewed children and have them, you know, we have to ask them with a witness to maybe, you know, take off a piece of clothing. And you see bruises and you see kids bleeding. And so some of it you see firsthand. And there's situations where you go out into some neighborhoods to like known drug houses. Weird knees will shake when you get out of the car. So you really have to get yourself composed so you can go and do your job.
Were you experiencing symptoms at the time?
If I was, I didn't recognize it as such.
When did you first realize something might be wrong?
It wasn't until I actually quit doing that job. I had moved on and was a vocational counselor.
Which is less stressful.
Much less stressful. And what would happen, I would be, say, you know, sitting, having a beer, talking to a couple of friends or people that I'd meet. And if I started talking about my old job, you know, people would say, like, you know, hey, what brought you up here? And, you know, why did you move and stuff? I would find myself getting emotional. And it was one of those things where it was quite unexpected. When you're crying into your beer, you're like, why is this happening?
So what did you do? How did you find your way to getting help?
Luckily, I had a very good supervisor at my new job. And I explained to her some of the feelings that I was having and that it was happening at work. It wasn't necessarily preventing me from doing my job, but I was getting emotional at times where I kind of withdrew and I might have to sign out and go home. And she suggested going to see our EAP counselor.
Employee Assistance Program.
Yes, ma'am. Employee Assistance Program. And the counselor did an excellent job. I mean, I told her what was happening to me. And my father is a Vietnam vet. My mother is a refugee. Mm-hmm. I have been around military veterans all my life and never would associate their PTSD the way I would with me. It was just, I thought, I've never been through things like that. So once again, it just never occurred to me. But the counselor I spoke with, she actually brought up my social work experience. And she said, you know, during the time you did all that work, did you work with people who had been exposed to domestic violence? And of course, the answer was yes. And have you worked with people who have been sexually and physically abused? And I'm like, yes. And she goes, did some of them have PTSD? And I says, yeah. You know, I worked with them and their psychologist, you know, at length at times. And she goes, well, they weren't veterans. And I was like, yes. And so, and then she kind of turned it around on me. She goes, then why not you? That just hit me really heavy.
How are you doing now?
Doing a lot better. And I'm comfortable where I'm at. But I do kind of know it's out there.
That's Michael Coleman, a former social worker who wrestled with PTSD. Thank you, Michael.
No problem.
We'll turn now to Sandro Galea. He serves as dean at the Boston University School of Public Health. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You were listening to that conversation with Michael Coleman.
I was.
So let's start with the basics. What kind of range of symptoms do people with PTSD experience?
Yeah, I thought Michael was describing a number of the classic symptoms that are diagnostic for post-traumatic stress. He was re-experiencing the events that he had lived that were traumatic for him. He was feeling jumpy and at the same time also feeling withdrawn. And he was trying to avoid both social interactions and other reminders of his time around the traumatic event.
I obviously spent a long time covering conflicts, and I had acute PTSD for a while, and I got treatment. And as you mentioned, there is sort of a range of different things that you can experience. I had the sort of more classic things to do with combat, nightmares and anxiety. But our understanding of who this disorder can impact has changed a lot since the Vietnam War era.
Yeah, the diagnosis of PTSD has only existed formally since 1980. Now, of course, PTSD is like any other mental illness, a physiological illness, which has existed as long as we've had humans on the planet. And you can see descriptions of symptoms going back thousands of years that are consistent with it.
What do we know about who might be affected by PTSD?
Well, what is interesting about the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress is that it has the word post-traumatic in the title, which makes one think that we can simply focus on the trauma itself and what happens afterwards. But in fact, we know now that the lifetime experience before the trauma, the nature of the trauma itself, and what happens to you after the trauma, even though unrelated to trauma, all matter for whether you are going to get PTSD and the course of PTSD. So to be a bit more specific, let's start with before the traumatic event. Childhood traumas are highly predictive, these adverse childhood experiences, of subsequent PTSD if you experience a traumatic event. And then you move on to after the traumatic event. So an event happens, and what one sees is, first of all, most people will end up having symptoms right away and keep them. But the question is, who keeps the symptoms in the long term? And we know from a number of studies that experiencing other stressful events that have nothing to do with the trauma. So, for example, experiencing divorce or experiencing problems with kids in school will prolong the course of post-traumatic stress. So really, we have to look at before the trauma itself, and after the trauma.
Let's talk about treatment. Can you recover from PTSD?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the treatments are broadly in two categories. You have cognitive behavioral therapy type treatments, which is sort of talk therapy, and you have pharmacological type treatment, which is drugs. The two probably are comparably effective, but that does not mean that there's not a proportion who go on to have chronic PTSD that is resistant to treatment. But fortunately, that is a minority.
I did EMDR. That's what helped me. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and if that is still a treatment that is considered effective?
Yeah, EMDR involves eye movements, and it's very unclear whether or not those eye movements are in some ways therapeutic or really some other marker for just the engagement between the patient and the therapist. But broadly speaking, what we do know is that a constellation of different approaches, all of which involve helping the person suffering these symptoms recognize the physiological stimuli, adapt to them, and move on with what the person would like to do.
The other thing I did, which I think is very common, is that I got a dog.
Yes.
I did it actually on the same day that I was going to have my first therapy session. I actually went to the pound and got my first adopted dog. But I actually showed up covered in dog fur because the dog had jumped all over me.
Yeah, there is a long tradition of service animals being helpful for people with PTSD as well as with other forms of mental illness. It's tricky because there really is no standard evidence about the utility of service animals, but certainly you see that these animals do provide comfort to a whole range of people with post-traumatic stress disorder.
What's your best advice if you are someone who is suffering from PTSD? What is the best thing to do, and where can you find those resources?
Yeah, we know, unfortunately, that fewer than a third of people who could benefit from help actually get help. And the best advice would be, if you think you have symptoms, if you think that you are experiencing something like this, you should really see a counselor. And frequently I think people have a hard time knowing exactly, well, how do I get a counselor? And we know that probably the best point of access is a primary care provider, be it a nurse or be it a doctor or be it a social worker, someone has contact with. Any primary care health provider will know how within one system they can connect you with a counselor.
So ask at your job, like our guest did, or ask your doctor.
Absolutely.
Get help, though, if you feel like you need it.
Absolutely. We know that people do better with help. We also know that people do not get help as much as they could.
That's Sandro Galea. He's dean at the Boston University School of Public Health. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Earlier in the segment, we heard from former social worker Michael Coleman. Next week on The Call-In, your experiences at the Thanksgiving table. What dust-ups you anticipate and how all the dust settles. Start by telling us what kinds of disagreements you expect as you look forward to Turkey Day. Call in at 202-216-9217. Be sure to include your full name, your contact info, where you're from, and we may use it on the air. That number again, 202-216-9217.